Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here with my co-host, Michael P. for Patrick, of course.
Yep.
Because he's Irish.
No, I'm German.
McCarthy. You're not German.
I'm just kidding.
You're not anything close. You even did a DNA test. They said you were 100% Irish.
Well, I haven't done that yet, but I went to the doctor, and I have a hand condition that is associated with Irish people, and I didn't even know we got our own hand condition.
Yeah, you know, you got your own hand condition. You got that going for you, Mikey.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, we're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you'd like to call in and ask a question, because we're on an open show, you're the guest tonight, you get to decide the conversation and the direction of the conversation, saying, hey, you know, if you answer this question for me, it could be incredibly helpful. But you know what else is, there's a lot of people out there that would love to hear that question answered, and they're just not the kind of people that would call in. So you're not only helping yourself, but you're helping a lot of other people by calling in and asking your question at 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and lead the conversation tonight, so I don't have to sit here and talk about Irish hand conditions any longer than necessary, and we can go from there.
You know, I know we talked about a couple other things that we would fill the gap with until our first caller jumped to the front of the line. But one thing that is timely is today, for many people listening in our listening area, was the first day of school. And I learned from some friends of mine that the private schools in our area have are experiencing extremely high enrollments, and many of them have grown their grown their capacity and are accepting larger classes because there's so much demand out there. And I think it's always a good thing to remind people that, you know, rules on 529s changed recently. And if you're putting a child through private school, K through 12, that 529 is now available to give you a Maryland state tax deduction for those tuition dollars.
Yeah, so explain that to them, Mikey, is that they can actually put $10,000 into the Maryland 529 two, three, 4 weeks later, take it back up, pay that tuition, and get a $5,000 deduction on their Maryland tax return per child in their family. So if you have two children, that's $10,000 a year you're going to get as a deduction by doing that.
Yep, absolutely. Well, I think you explained it well enough, and since our guests are our callers are our guests, I want to go right to Jim in Reisterstown. Jim, you had a question about a home sale?
Yes, good evening. Thank you very much for taking my question. Always enjoy your program, and Andrew, congratulations on going to Florida and following your own advice. I heard your comment this morning. I've heard it a couple of times. So my question, it involves a primary residence. I know there's an exemption you can get, or and I think that's due to expire. If you could explain that a little bit. And then I have a second question related to this, having used part of that primary residence for a rental and possibly in the future up until that exemption would expire. So
when you're saying the exemption, you're talking about when you sell your personal residence?
Yeah, when you sell your personal residence, isn't that something?
So it's $500,000 capital gain exclusion,
right?
For a married couple, $250,000 for an individual. But there's no time that it's expiring. That's been a rule since 1998, and it ain't going away anytime soon.
Okay.
So you're good to go as long as you don't have a $500,000 or greater gain. You can sell your personal. Are you married or single?
Single.
So $250,000 for you. Right. You can sell your place, and as long as you don't have a $250,000 gain or more. And remember, the gain is what you paid for the house plus any capital improvements you put into the house. You put a new roof on the house, that included. You buy a new refrigerator, that's included. You buy a new HVAC system, that's included. You do new landscaping around your house, that's included. Anything that's a capital improvement adds on to what you paid for the house, plus your settlement costs when you bought the house. And right. then you figure out, did you make more than $250,000? And that's how it works now.
Mm-hmm. And is there a rule that you have to have lived in that house for a certain number of years?
Two of the last five. That's all it is. Of the last five. So if you come with me and you come down to Florida and you say, I'm going to live with Drew in Amelia Island, so here I go. And you move, you leave your residence in Maryland, but you haven't sold it yet, okay? You're keeping it for a few years, and you come down here, and then in 2025, you decide to sell it. Well, chances are it's not two of your last five, but if in 2024 you decide to sell it, chances are that it is two of your last five, and as long as settlement goes through before that, you're $250,000 capital gain exclusion.
Okay. And just one more question related to this whole thing. So let's say that primary residence I have, I've actually used it in part as a rental property. Let's say I have...
All right, that gets a little more complicated.
I thought so.
Okay, so, you know, let's say I used it for business or a rental property and I depreciated a portion of it. So let's say I depreciated 15% of the house. So when I go to sell the house, I'm going to get the $250,000 capital gain exclusion, but I'm only going to get that for the portion of the house that I didn't rent. Now, here's where it really gets complicated. That's only for the portion of the house that was rented after 2009, because before 2009, you could apply the whole $250,000 capital gain against any type of rental or business usage, et cetera, et cetera. So you'd have to prorate the amount of years you owned the house up to 2009, and then the amount of years from 2009 until the year you sell it, and then that pro rata portion is going to be the amount that you do have to recapture and report as a gain, and the 250 is not going to be able to exclude that. It's a little complicated. I made it as simple as I could.
So basically that 250 gets, in a sense, adjusted or prorated based on some, in part, for that portion that was used as a rental property.
Yes, but only for the years of ownership from 2009 to the day you sell it.
Right.
It's just a funky little thing about the law. Yeah. You thank Charlie Rangel for that part, you know? Okay. You remember Charlie Rangel? Anyway, we got to go,
Jim.
Thank
you very much. Excellent.
Take care.
Excellent show. Thank you for your time.
See you, buddy. Take care. Go ahead, Mikey. You were trying to rile me on.
So we'll be right back with more Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the financial consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and... Last week, I had to repent to Chris Klaproth, my producer, that I was using Shazam to music recognize and make him think that I was a music genius. And I felt so bad, I had to repent to him. And so I don't think it is cheating. It wasn't cheating because there were no rules as to how I had to figure it out. But you know, it's not here or there. I think that it was perfectly legitimate, but he was shocked.
You sound a little defensive, though.
He's shocked that I did that, you know. And but you know, I think of Jim Kirk in the Kobe Maru, challenge in Starfleet Enterprise, and he hacked the computer and made it not do what it normally does, and won. And they got mad at him, you know, and I've always wondered, why were you mad at him? You didn't make the rules that he couldn't hack your computer system, you know, so anyway.
Wow. We've trailed off on Star Trek references. I think we should go to our our next caller.
Wait, wait a minute. We're on an open show, Mikey, 410-922-6680. Yep. If you want to stop me from rambling about music and Star Trek, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in, and your question is something somebody else out there wants to hear, so call in. Just like our first caller called in, and he had a great question about houses, and so I bet you there were a few people that loved that conversation. But anyway, what do we got next, Mike?
Well, Ben in Fort Meade has called in, and he wants to talk about investments. Ben, how can we help?
Hey, Drew, thanks a lot for taking my call. I got a quick question. Now, my mother-in-law is in a pretty good place where she's late 70s, got an insurance, a lot of money through insurance, about $100,000, looking to find a place to put that that's secure and will not increase her tax benefits. She won't need the money for probably the next 3 to 5 years. She's got a pretty steady income with respect to her Social Security and military retirement. House is paid off, everything else. So this $100,000 is just sitting in her bank account doing nothing right now. And I don't have any good options for her to recommend where she could place that to earn a little bit of interest on it with having some security. And it's not going to go away based on inflation or, you know, loss of an investment.
So, Ben, that's an interesting question. And, what most, a lot of financial salespeople would say, you need to get an annuity because, you know, you're not going to risk the loose loss of the money and you're not going to have to pay taxes on it and you're not going to do this and you're not going to do that. But, you know, those types of recommendations are self-serving to the people that sell them. And somebody like your mother-in-law, mother or mother-in-law?
Mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law. I'm going to assume she's not in a high tax bracket to begin with anyway, right?
No, I don't believe. I mean, like I said, her house is paid off, but she makes, let's just say, $100,000 a year based on, previous retirement income. So, no, I don't think she's in a super high tax bracket.
And how about her children? Are her children doing pretty well, all making a good $100,000 or more themselves?
Yeah, her daughter, my wife, stay-at-home mom, and the other daughter, is late 40s, self-sufficient and everything, so doing pretty well with her life.
You see, so here's what happens. Somebody like your mother-in-law comes and they talk to a salesperson and they'll say, do an annuity. You don't have any risk and you defer all your income. But here's what happens is that money becomes a ticking time bomb in the hands of your mother-in-law. And then she passes away. It goes down to your wife or her sister. And next thing you know, all that income tax that was deferred for 5, 10, 15, 20 years blows up into the hands of your wife and your sister-in-law. It's a totally ridiculous concept. There are unique situations where it might work, but most times it just ends up blowing up. Felt great to the mother-in-law, but it doesn't work for the children in the long run. My suggestion to you would be you find a diversified allocated portfolio of index funds and you put the money in there. Make sure you leave her enough money that she can draw on cash if she needs it. She's got an emergency fund, in other words, and then you buy these index funds. Now, why am I saying index funds? You're saying, well, wait a minute, those are risky. Well, not really, because you're buying a diversified pool of some of the greatest companies in the world, and unless you think the world's coming to an end, an asteroid's going to hit it and end the world as we know it. And even if that happens, your mother's safest investments won't work anyway. So you put it in a diversified pool of index funds. And you see, here's what index funds do. They don't create a lot of taxable income. They don't create a lot of capital gains. They just grow over time, assuming that the world economies continue to grow, which I would assume they will. They just grow over a period of time. And if your mother-in-law never needs them, they just go to your wife and her sister tax free because they get what's called a step up in basis. Under the current laws, they get a step up in basis, and they don't pay taxes on the capital gains when they go to them, whereas in an annuity and other things like that, they will have to pay all the taxes on it. And you see, it becomes the perfect concept as long as they're not sitting there day to day thinking, oh my gosh, I went up $500. And then the next day, oh my gosh, I went down $300. You know, if they're not doing that and they just own it and they just hold it for long periods of time, they've got other cash to draw on if they absolutely need it. It's the absolute perfect scenario for somebody like your mother-in-law.
You had said that it was 3 to 5 years. She doesn't have a known need for the cash in exactly 3 to 5 years, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, just wanted to clarify.
Pretty healthy and everything right now. Her car's paid off, house's paid off. So right now, you know, based on her retirement income, she's got enough cash to cover all any day-to-day or any unexpected expenses.
So, you know, you see what I'm saying, though, is even if she needs it, okay, she could sell the index fund and pay long-term capital gains tax on it instead of ordinary income, which annuities and things like that are. And, you know, this is the kind of garbage that's spilled out to people from the sales forces of financial, quote-unquote, financial advisors that do selling products. And they really don't know what they're talking about. This is just my personal opinion. Mikey's sitting there looking at me saying, Drew, do you really have to go there? And the answer is yes. So, you know, that's my opinion. This is what I would do with my own mother's money, which I am, you know, we just keep it invested.
Yeah. The only thing that I would touch on there, Ben, is just, you got to be committed to whatever you decide to do. So if you do the index funds, and you know, we do have a short, you know, hopefully short period of time where the markets go down, that you stay committed to that, because you know that's the only thing that you got to watch out for, is that whatever level of risk you take on through your investments is a level of risk you can accept when you're watching it through the bad times.
Perfect. Thank you very much. I appreciate the advice. And
okay, Ben.
Keep using Shazam. I use it as well all the time, too.
Cheaters.
Well, Chris isn't going to let me do that anymore.
All right.
Sir.
Thanks, Ben. Well, Drew, we don't have any other callers, but we still got plenty of show left.
So you got to come up with a topic. Well, we're at the end of the hour here. So let us just tell our listeners, we're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680. Nobody's online. Two great calls already tonight.
You're up
and,
first.
And you'll be up first if you call in 410-922-6680. And your question is going to be somebody else's question. So if you want to call in 410-922-6680, we're going to be right back. Money, riches, and wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
See, you know, Chris is a good winner because he says, okay, he can't figure out the name of most music songs. So I'll play one that he definitely knows. You know, The Circle, Red Rubber Ball. And, you know, so I got that. Maybe he'll play me my other song that I know.
I wish he would have just figured it out and started composing his own music that Shazam doesn't know.
Anyway, we're here on an open show, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. I think we have two or three lines still open, right, Mikey?
We have lines still open, but we've got a couple callers to go to. But
all right, go for them.
All right. We've got John in Arbutus who wants to talk about annuities.
Hello, I have a fixed annuity that expires in 3 years, and I understand that it's not an investment, it's an insurance policy. Can you explain that to me, please?
Sure. Fixed annuity, almost all annuities except for variable annuities are insurance products. So how old are you right now, sir?
How old am I?
Yeah.
I'm 80 years old.
80. So, you know, even though that policy, quote unquote, expires in 3 years, you'll be able to renew it all the way up to at least age 92, if not 99, without having to liquidate it if you don't want to.
The hell is it an insurance policy rather than an investment?
Okay, because, you know, an annuity is a tax-deferred investment that is ultimately intended to become a stream of income which will disperse to you over your life expectancy. Now, you see, there's where the insurance feature comes in, is that if you ever get to that point in life where you say, okay, annuitize my annuity, they will begin liquidating monthly or yearly to you a set sum of money regardless how long you live. So if you live to life expectancy, you would get what you would have expected. But if you live well beyond it, you would get far more than you ever expected. And that's where the actuarial insurance feature comes into an annuity. But you don't see it right now because all you're doing is deferring the income on that investment.
Uh-huh.
Did I make that clear, sort of? I mean, it's kind of complicated, but...
But do I have to direct them at some time to start making me those payments?
You can do it anytime you want, but when it expires in 3 years, you can defer it on to, let's say, age 90. And then when you hit age 90, you can defer it again to age 95. And if you defer it again, you could defer it normally to age 99. But I don't know what your contract specifically says, but almost all of them go to at least age 90, if not 95, and more than likely 99. So you have nothing to worry about right now. But if you do want it, you can say to them, begin the payments and make me a monthly income. I don't want to just keep growing the money. I want monthly income. You could do that anytime you want, my friend.
Okay, well, I appreciate that so much. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Good
call. What was his name? Don?
Ben. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I lost it. I don't know. I already dropped it, but... But anyway, we do have more callers, but we got a lot more show left. So
go ahead. Come on. Let's keep them rolling, Mikey.
All right. Pete in Annapolis, you want to talk about the economy.
Hi.
Yeah, Pete.
Thank you, Drew. And I appreciate you all picking my call. Great show. The deficit spending right now is obviously very high, and they're talking about passing another $3.5 trillion of spending and potentially having multi-trillion dollar deficits quite a number of years to come. What are your feelings about the effect on inflation, and do you think interest rates are going to go up as a result, and wouldn't that impact the stock market negatively, or what do you think on that?
So here's the thing on that. It's complicated, and nobody knows the answer. Obviously, a country cannot spend unlimited, and sooner or later it comes to roost, okay? We all know that. It's only logical. You look at any other country in the world, and these fools, in my opinion, this is my opinion, Mikey's out there, Drew, do you have to be so, you know, expressive about your terms? But yeah, these fools who call for modern monetary theory, who say that you can spend an unlimited amount of money and it doesn't have any effect on your economy, as long as you're a developed world country, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, it's ridiculous because sooner or later, the excessive amount of debt comes home to roost. The problem we have, Pete, is we don't know when. It could be 2150 when it comes home to roost. It could be 2075. It could be 2023 for all I know. I have no idea.
It's likely a moving target, wouldn't you say?
It could be, Mike. I have no idea. I just know that I have to keep my eye open to a few things. Number one, foreign borrowing, or foreign lending, I should say. Foreign lending. Foreign lending is something I keep my eye on, because if you run excessive debt and you start to rely on foreigners to support that borrowing, you have a problem. You have a serious problem, and you're going to run into a serious inflation issue if it explodes in your hands. Excessive foreign lending is not happening in our country. And even though there are people out there that say, oh, you know, China's got all of our debt. China only owns about $995 billion of our $22 trillion of debt. Japan owns more of the debt of the United States than any country in the world. And Japan only has about $1.2 trillion total foreign lending to the United States is only in the neighborhood of about $6 trillion. And I don't consider that excessive at this point in time, but I'm keeping my eye on it. Okay. Now here's the point. Here's the point. Japan borrows 50% of all of their budget needs every year. So in other words, they only bring in taxes of about, let's say they spend $2 trillion. They bring in taxes of about $1 trillion and they borrow $1 trillion. I mean, think about that. We're only borrowing like 15% or so of our debt at this point in time. And here's another interesting thing. The United States just barely has 100, 110% of our debt to GDP. Japan has something like 250% debt to GDP. And yet Japan still is no inflation whatsoever. No inflation. But keep in mind this unique feature about Japan. Japan finances every dollar of their debt with domestic lending. Domestic lending from their central bank, domestic lending from their pension funds, their banks, and their individuals and mutual funds. So that's the unique feature. Keep your eye on the Federal Reserve and what they're doing and how many bonds they're buying, and keep your eye on foreign lending to the United States. And if foreign lending to the United States starts to explode on the upside, now we have a problem. And the people with modern monetary theory will learn that their theory has no basis in reality.
Just another quick one. If we lose our reserve currency status in the world, would that also contribute to an inflationary environment, do you think?
It would definitely cause it, but you're not going to see any. And there's no threat at this point in time to the U.S. world reserve currency, but it is coming sometime in the next, I don't know, 10, 15 years from technology. Technology, not necessarily Bitcoin, but some form of technology is going to usurp the United States and any individual country from being the world reserve currency. And I expect a basket of currencies to be the world reserve currency in the future, which then would, even if the United States is 25 or 30% of that basket, that's still 75% of our world reserve currency status that was destroyed. So expect that in the future.
But the countries of the world are certainly going to fight against that because they like having their own monetary policy, and it's hard to do it without
Still have their own currency, Mike, but the world will deal in a basket currency, a stable coin that is a basket currency. That's my theory. I don't know if it'll work or not. Anyway, Mikey, we got to go. Pete, great question. Good call. Good question. You want to go to another call, or are we going to go to a pause?
We're going to be going to a pause in a minute, but maybe it's right before we do, maybe it's a good time to just remind everybody that if you have a question and you're wondering how long you'll have to wait to get your question answered, the answer right now is not very long. So
you don't have anybody really online.
Don't have anybody online. You who are listening and thinking of calling, you are the next guest of the show.
410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask your question, direct the conversation, and in this last quarter hour of the show, now's the time to call in. But right now, I've got to go to traffic, and we'll be right back. Money, riches, and wealth.
Hi, this is Drew Tignanelli of the Financial Consulate, saying a financial advisor must have a tax planning passion. I'm appealing only to those with a net worth of more than $5 million or with taxable income of over $400,000. You are the target for higher and higher taxes. If you're in this elite club, you can no longer afford to have a financial advisor that is not passionate to minimize taxes. I'm appealing to you with income over $400,000 or a net worth greater than $5 million because you are the target and need the Financial Consulate's passion to minimize income taxes and estate taxes. Call to set up your introductory meeting, 410-823-7283 or 410-823-SAVE, or online, financialconsulate.com. If your taxable income is $400,000 or more, or your net worth is over $5 million, you are the target. So call to begin your tax plan, 410-823-7283, or online, financialconsulate.com.
Fighting soldiers from the sky, fearless men who jump and die,
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. And
I actually bought Drew this CD.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
Where'd it go?
I don't know. It was in your office a while. This was years ago I bought it.
Ballad of the Green Berets by Sergeant Barry Sadler, you know? So I don't need Shazam because I do know my music. We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we're on an open show. We do have a lot of callers now, which is so typical. You know, I wish you all would call in early, but we'll get through them. Go for it, Mikey.
All right. Albert in Elkridge, you had a question about your government pension?
Yes. I'm currently a government employee, 19 years in.
Which government? State or federal is all I need to know.
Oh, I'm sorry, federal.
Federal, okay, go ahead.
And I'm hoping to retire in 7 to 10 years. I've got my TSP, and of course I've got my pension. But just to kind of go back to the point you were talking about in regards to the excess spending by the government, you know, there's always concern about, well, I have concerns about my pension and whether it's going to be there fully, you know, when I do retire. So I wanted to get your opinion in regards to, you know, taking a pension or possibly taking the payout and then just reinvesting that with a financial advisor.
Normally what happens with the payout from a government pension is it's normal trivial as compared to the monthly. So if you do a present value calculation on it, you'll find that it's not anything close to what your monthly pension would be. So it would be almost suicide to take a lump sum from any form of government pension.
Okay. So just kind of roll the dice. Hopefully everything works out and just take what you get because you're probably better off.
You're probably going to be better off because remember, as I always tell people about Social Security, the federal government prints the money. So, you know, and every federal government, even the Argentinian government and the Russian government, who inflated their ways out of things, their government pensions, their Social Security systems were always relatively secure through those things. It was everybody else in the country that got wiped out. So, you know, I don't feel that it would be a real problem.
Okay.
I can't tell you for sure, but when you're ready to retire, if you wanted to, come and say, you know, here's the lump sum they'll give us, here's the monthly we'll give you, we'll do a present value calculation, tell you whether it's even remotely close. And if it is, then you can make that choice. But my experience, It's not even remotely close. Okay?
Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks, Albert.
Good question.
Very good. Well, where you want to keep trying to get through everybody tonight, so let's go on to Bonnie in Ellicott City. Bonnie, you had a question about beneficiaries?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I really love your show. I have a question. I recently altered my will. I only have one daughter, so these stocks are going to go to her.
Okay.
They were not as a beneficiary on them because I inherited them when my husband passed away.
Okay.
So I never had to change them. I just recently retired, so I got the will updated, and the attorney said, okay, just have her name put on as a beneficiary.
Great.
And so I called about having that done, and they sent these very complicated forms with all kinds of, like, tax things and everything else, and I'm thinking, I don't think I want to do this, or is that what you have to do to make them even like a TOD? What is the best thing to do?
Well, what brokerage firm are they held at?
Well, I never really had a brokerage firm. Okay.
So what you have them sitting at?
They were.
Oh, that's your problem.
That's my problem.
That's your problem. You got to get away from those lunatics, American Stock Transfer Agent and ComputerShare. And all these, you know, these companies are ridiculously expensive, ridiculously complicated. They're impossible to deal with. You want to take the statements of each and every one of the companies you have with these different groups like American Stock whatever the heck they're called, Transfer Agent. And you want to get it moved into like Charles Schwab and Company or Fidelity. And it's to your benefit to do that. They're not going to charge you anything more. They're actually going to charge you less, because if you tried to sell that stock, let's say you tried to sell 1,000 shares, they're going to charge you something like $300 to do that. You sell 1,000 shares at Schwab, it's zero.
Then you get help.
And you can help, you know, and so forth. And you can put a TOD on those accounts within a heartbeat. But you talk to these transfer agents, everything's complicated. Everything requires, you know, this form and that form. And, you know, you just want to get away from them, my friend. Get the money, get the stock into a discount brokerage firm like Schwab is probably my number one preference company to get it to, and ask them to put a TOD on, and you'll find how simple it should be.
Now, is that because Charles Schwab came on this show and talked so nice about you?
Well, then go to Fidelity, you know?
I'm just kidding.
You can, you know, whatever you want to do. I think Schwab does the greatest job of all the companies out there in the discount brokerage firms, all right?
Well, let me ask you this. You know, I have some things with Fidelity. Would they be another choice?
Yeah, that would be a great company. So just go to the local Fidelity office with your statements of the where these stocks are held and say, can you just transfer these in from these transfer agents to you and put a TOD on the account for my daughter, okay?
Okay, so that when I would pass away,
it just go right to her. Boom. She wouldn't have to go through probate. Very simple, all right?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Bonnie, take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, we got one last caller on. What time is we're good? All right.
We're good.
Let's go right to Sherry in Florida, down there with you. Hey. You have some questions about capital gains.
How are you?
Great.
I just want you to speak of any of the latest news about an increase in capital gains, what you think might happen with capital gains tax for, like, the upper earners. And
sure.
I haven't heard anything about it recently, so I'll take the answer off the air. And thanks for your program.
All right, thank you. So this is a great question she's asking. So President Biden had put out a proposal that capital gains would be increased starting at incomes over $400,000, and it would be retroactive back to April, I think it was 28th or something like that. As far as I'm hearing, that's not going to hold. The new one now is that the House Ways and Means Committee is proposing a new capital gains increase for incomes over like $400,000 also. And if they do pass it in the House Ways and Means Committee, which is supposed to be within the next week, if they do pass it, that will be the retroactive date. And so if you did have something you absolutely wanted to sell and intended to sell, you should sell it immediately before they get that passed and have a retroactive provision on it. But here's how it would work. If your income, if your adjusted gross income exceeds $400,000, well, actually, you know, it depends on the rule. Some of it could be as high as $1 million. Then your capital gains rate would be 39.6%, which would be the maximum income rate that they want to charge to high earners. And if it's over 600,000, it would be 23.8%. If it's under that, and this is all assuming you're married. And if it's under that, it would be 15%. So that's what they're trying to push. It's this, you know, it's this, what do you call it? This attack on quote unquote high earners. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that there should be a better tax system, that high earners can't get away from paying a same tax rate as lower income earners do. Because, you know, Mike, as well as I do, somebody who's worth a lot of money, you know, like Warren Buffett, he could probably keep his tax rate at 12-15% if he wanted to, right?
Yeah,
we've had
clients that where we've done good tax planning. Know, they look at it and they go, really? And I'm like, yeah, really.
Yeah, we can do that. We can do all kinds of amazing things. And so I'm a firm believer that there ought to be. But the problem is they tried to do it inside this stupid tax law we got with 50,000 pages of tax code. And it's ridiculous. So they come up with these more stupid ideas that if your adjusted gross income is over $1 million, you're going to pay 39.6% on your capital gains tax. So the point is, it's not passed. It's not even close to pass. Even if the House Ways and Means Committee passes it, there's no assurance they're going to get it through. And so for right now, I say your best bet is to just be aware that it could happen, but don't fret that it's actually going to happen. How's that for an answer, Mikey?
I think it was a good one.
And there's no other callers, and we're almost absolutely out of time. What do you think?
Yep, I think the music's coming. I can see the hands are moving.
Oh, no, my clock is fast on my computer by who knows, but I think we're about 2 seconds away from Billy Joel playing Shower of My People with Love.
That was a good show, sir.
Mikey, it's always good to be with you. This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Things are gonna be